and welcome to House of Comments. We apparently, according to Emma, have a spring statement in our steps. How are you?
I am fine, Charlotte. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine. Well, I know this will be a shock to you hearing us on a Wednesday, not a Friday, but we kind of thought it's such a big event. But remember, Emma, it's not a fiscal event.
Not a fiscal event.
No, just one that sort of looks like one and smells like one. We've had the spring statement today, so we thought we'd jump on a bit early and try and unpack what we saw from Rachel Reeves. The first thing I'll say is I thought it was a very confident performance for her. Forget the substance.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. We can do the substance a bit, but yeah, I think she put the show on that she needed to put on.
I think that's probably
at least
fair.
Body language, projection. I think we can come to tone a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, she is confident. She looked confident. She sounded confident. She has been under huge pressure in her job. Let's not pretend otherwise.
I mean, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because I think she is under huge pressure, whilst also I think they're fully aware in number 10 that A, prime ministers who get rid of their chancellors look weak. And tend to go not long after. And B, that they devolved economic policy to her. It wasn't like her power grabbing that solely. I mean, it wasn't a one-way street. So I don't think that they can turn around and go, oh, you messed that all up, blah, 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 blah. Whether they think that or not, because frankly, that's what they asked her to do. So she is both under huge pressure and also pretty secure, which is a bizarre position to be in.
I think that's actually a really fair summary, because it's sort of Schrodinger's sacking or whatever.
Yeah.
She's both under huge pressure and not, you know, and very safe in her job at the same time, depending on, even if you open the, whatever it is, the cat box or whatever.
I think, to be fair, it's not been a year. We get much closer to a general election, that's the other thing, is we are a long way away from a general election, and the perception of her hasn't changed, then she's under considerably different pressures.
That's an interesting word to use, perception. What do you think the perception of Rachel Reeves is?
I think she has been seen as too brittle in the role. I would say the left think that she has, and this is where what I mean about tone, been almost entirely focused on macroeconomics.
Growth, growth, growth.
Growth, 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 without any kind of narrative about what that means for the people at the sharper end. We talked last week about the welfare reform stuff.
We did.
The right weren't going to like her whatever, because they're the right and they don't want a Labour Chancellor.
Sure.
So you have to unpack a little bit the attacks they were going to make anyway with the attacks that have more validity to them.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sense, I think, from the kind of, let's just call them what they are, the FT wing of the world, whereby the economic stuff that's happening is more old Labour right than new Labour. And the FT, I think, is very much still dominated by where it's on the left. It's a new Labour left rather than old Labour left.
Okay, I think it's interesting, the perception of her, because I think there's always a problem when you're a woman in a senior role, how people perceive you. Let's take that as granted, you know, all the boring stuff about someone's voice, someone, blah, 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 all of that usual stuff that we find so tiresome, I think exists with her. I think, as I say, I think her performance today was quite punchy.
Yeah.
I think she does have that sort of brittle to her. I think most chancellors do, because they feel very got at and very under pressure. But I think there is an element of that. I have to say, the constant using of the phrase working people drove me almost to insanity. I think it's been used to the point of meaningless, actually. And I know what they're trying to imply with it, but I think that this is just a stylistic point. It just sort of started driving me mad. The one other stylistic point I really want to ask you about before we get into the substance is the constant refrain of the parties opposite. The emphasis on the plural.
Yeah, because they're going to get attacked from the left, ironically, by the Lib Dems, and the right by the Tories. So they are going to be attacked by both. I think she was expecting to get battered by both Mel Stride. And is it Ed Davey responding for the Lib Dems? I didn't watch either of them, so I couldn't tell
Presumably
you.
Presumably it's Ed Davey.
I think there are two things at play there. First of all, there is the fact that she's about to get attacked by two people in the Commons, but also that Labour are starting to wake up to the fact that while their laser-like focus has been on Labour reform or reform Labour switchers, there is a left flank where they're losing votes.
I think there's a really big element of reform to the emphasis on parties, because I think that those seats that you're hinting at and those switches you're talking about, she's very wary of and conscious of.
I think the parties thing was about the Lib Dems, not about reform.
I thought it was basically all of them.
Maybe, but reform aren't responding in the Commons.
Because they're too small.
Yeah.
Same with the Greens.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, of course, people don't hear a Nigel Farage response.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the three people who watch GB News will see it tonight.
There's five when you're on it, surely.
Yeah, I bring in a whole new audience, but I haven't been on it for a while now, Charlotte.
Hence the drop in viewing figures, or?
Exactly. Yeah. Desperate for me.
Aren't we all? But I think that parties thing was interesting, because in previous years, it has been very, you know, a duopoly.
The party opposite.
Party
yeah.
opposite. Labour versus Tory, Tory yeah. versus Labour. I think, to be fair, it's quite a serious way to respond to the current state of politics.
Yeah. I may be wrong in my analysis. It happens occasionally. And it might be just me being old school, there are three main parties, and you're actually right that this is a response to all of the parties and the fact that we are now in at least four, if not five party system.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned a few times on the show, Thangam Debonair losing to the Greens.
Yeah.
It depends which part of the country you are. And I thought the whole overall message from Rachel Reeves was, we are the only party doing X, Y, Z, which we hope you like. That yeah. kind of vibe. Let's talk about some of the things. So she said we fundamentally reforming the state, which is kind of interesting, which is, I guess that is what you would expect from a Labour government. She was very explicit about it.
Yeah.
I think the most difficult...
And she used the words active state, which I really liked.
She did. And I thought of you when she did so. defence spending going up to 2.5% of GDP.
Yeah.
There's new benefits cuts, I think, are going to bring in save £3.4 billion. It's kind of a continuation of what we heard from Liz Kendall, but it keeps going further.
Yeah, I think the 3.4 billion is smaller than the 4.8, which I think it was last week, but that's because the OBR have said, you know, if you make this happen, one of the responses will be that people go on to the more, you know, some people will qualify for the more extreme benefits.
And on the OBR have halved its economic growth forecast for this year from 2% to 1%. And that, for me, was the most difficult moment for Reeves.
Because yeah, of course it was.
One, of course it was. And two, because no Chancellor wants to have to say those words, our growth forecasts have been halved. But also because it's a clear line of attack that I think has some truth to it. that the actions in her budget have triggered these responses. And I thought I watched a bit of Mel Stride before having to get on with some other stuff. I thought he started quite poorly, actually, but he sort of warmed up. And I thought the most punchy lines he had were talking that the economic problems were anyone but her, he said. And he also said that, I mean, it's kind of a criticism that always comes of Labour, but I think this is true on this occasion, and I've talked to you about it before, was that he said that she'd talked down the economy. Now, I've talked to you about tone before and the miserableism of the Labour government, and I think that is what he was hinting at. And I do think the government has to take some responsibility in front up to that slashing of the economic growth forecast because of some of the things they've done.
I don't completely disagree with you. I don't completely agree with you. The problem is not to, as is now my want, be our Jesse Single, but it's complicated. Like, if they just...
Of course it is. We're in a complicated world.
Yeah, but if they just done the measures they'd done and other things hadn't happened in the world that are also putting economic pressure on, and this had happened, you could go, there's a direct correlation between that and that. But there's so many other factors that everybody can claim their favourite narrative for it, if you see what I mean. Now, I'm not saying that to say none of what the government's done and none of what they've said and none of the narrative that they've set has caused...
And the practical policies.
Yeah, I mean, I think the practical policies will shake out in the long term because I think it will put more money in the everyday economy. What I'm saying is if I want to simply say it's got nothing to do with what the government have said, it's all down to Trump and Putin, and that is an argument that has loads of evidence to stand it up. If, on the other hand, someone once says that it's all down to the government's miserableism and the rise in national insurance contributions, there's lots of evidence to stand that up too. So all the narratives can be stood up, and what we're going to have is dueling narratives.
Yeah, and that is the nature of the beast, isn't it?
Yeah, in reality, I think that things that have not yet been implemented, we will see how they shake out. The national minimum wage goes up next week.
It does.
Now, there is always a trade-off between raising wages at the bottom that has on those people on the lowest wages, which is very positive, and the impact that those people on the lowest having more money in their pocket has on local economies, which is generally positive because they generally spend more locally, and employers' ability to employ more people.
I remember reading Frank Field's autobiography. I do mean Frank Field, not long before he passed away. And he was, I think, originally from the left, opposed to it, opposed to the minimum wage for some of the reasons you're talking about, and then sort of has come round for it, which was kind of interesting.
I mean, Frank Field is on the far edge of the right of the left.
Yeah, he's just a fascinating... My point is the conflict between the minimum wage and overall employability and economic growth has always been one that's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, when you say to someone like me on the left, what I hear is the left of the Labour Party, whereas obviously when you're coming from a different perspective, anyone in the Labour Party is on the left, and where they sit within that spectrum matters less to you because you're further away from it.
But I think you've raised a lot of perfectly fair points. And no, you can't take anyone seriously who pretends that there's no relationship between what is happening abroad, what is happening here. You know, that's why, and so on and so forth. I think that's fair. But given everything going on abroad, a government has to respond to that domestically. And they always knew there was a risk by, for example, the national insurance rises. They picked the narrative when they should have, you know, they did have a honeymoon period to be more positive. I'm sorry I said honeymoon period. I'm sorry. I'm glad we're separated by
Yeah, they didn't have a honeymoon period. That was the whole argument we had 6 months ago.
Right. They could have, had they not been so bloody miserable. I think there was a sort of talking down the economy, which has changed because I think they've realised the mistake.
I agree. I think that they went way too far with that.
But that has real market implications and financial and economic implications.
I agree. I think it was a mistake. I'm not defending it.
No.
I think you can do it for a few weeks in July when you go in and go, fuck me, what they've done with this place. But, you know, like someone who's just bought a house and then suddenly discovers it's riddled with woodworm.
Sure.
But eventually you've got to sort the woodworm out. And
also have to invite people to say, oh, I love my new house, come and see it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think they took that far too long, far too far hard. And again, this is what I mean by that slight, she's slightly rigid. Like, chancellors go into the Treasury and get captured by Treasury brain. I think she went into the Treasury with Treasury brain and possibly captured any of the imaginative civil servants who might have wanted to go, could we maybe do things a little bit differently now?
Yeah, but I really want to drill down on this one because it is important. You know, no chancellor wants to have to stand up and say my growth forecasts have been slashed by half for the year. Yes, there are better forecasts for the medium term. That's 100% true.
Yeah.
But she still had, this year is still another quote unquote difficult year. And it probably didn't have to be like this. Like, I accept the world is happening, but a chance with a different approach could have reduced the difficulties and therefore made the arguments about the wider world more reasonable. And I think people are fed up of hearing, oh, it's COVID, it's the war, it's this, it's that.
But it's also, it's so like, if you're not just someone who thinks Brexit was a mistake, as I think both you and I do.
Quite clear, very clearly. And I think every bit of economic data shows us that.
But nothing could have been worse timed than COVID to make that argument provably clearer. Because our economy got hit by something completely un-Brexit related at the exact moment that we also chose to leave the EU. So disentangling that has taken a lot of time. It's not there yet. And this is the problem. And it's why, you know, any of the sort of socialism in one country stuff just doesn't work, because we don't live in a world in which there is just one country.
Mm-hmm. But I think, though, that if the Tories can get that act together, and that is
That's a big if.
It's a big if. Absolutely.
I mean, there's a reason I didn't bother watching Mel Stride.
I thought he was started terribly and got slightly more impressed as he went on. But anyway, my point is, if they can get their act together, I repeat, big if, constantly saying she's blaming everyone else, constantly saying, one of his lines was, she taxed jobs and wealth creation. I think he said something like, she borrowed and spent and taxed like it was the 1970s, which I think is a slightly less good line. Because
how old do you have to be to have been an adult who would remember what that meant?
Quite. Well, at least 70.
I mean, older than me. Yeah, probably my parents' age.
So that's not a great line. I thought the other ones were. But if that becomes the prevailing narrative, Rachel Reeves doesn't take responsibility for anything. She's making it harder to earn money, et cetera, et cetera. That is dangerous. But as I say,
it's dangerous for Reed, but it's also dangerous for Stride, because if it turns out to be wrong, then in the same way.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I hadn't thought that.
The national minimum wage, oh, it's going to crash our economy, blah, blah, blah.
Hasn't.
Arguments just didn't. So what we are seeing, and frankly should see in politics, is a clash of two ideologies.
Sure. Or even multiple ideologies. And that's all great. And I think your point about the risk Mel Stride's making is a good one, because they also have to avoid the talking down the country thing.
Yeah.
From opposition. You do have to avoid that. And you also, then if you say everything's bad because of her, if things turn around, which is just citizens, of course, we should all want, you then have basically said it's all also because of your opponents.
Yeah. If you are saying all of this stuff is down to Rachel Reeves, and then it goes as Rachel Reeves hopes it will, and she's not an idiot. I mean,
No,
there's
quite the
thinking
opposite.
behind it, so she must be fairly hopeful that it will work. So what do you know, if you are giving her the sole credit for what you think is going to be a disaster and it turns out not to be a disaster, you're giving her the sole credit for success.
How do they change this narrative then, Labour Party? Because I thought it was the most powerful point, the blaming everyone else point. And I think people really are sick of that perception that the politicians blame everyone else but themselves. How can Rachel Reeves engineer not that away from that criticism?
Well, I think she needs to do things that people will see quickly.
Okay.
And I think that people's wages going up next week is a good start. I think if we start to see lots of building projects, if we start to see a country that looks like it's growing, like physically looks like it's doing stuff.
I can guarantee all you hear is NIMBYs going, oh, I'm just, it's horrible building.
I don't know. We'll hear a lot of that, but I don't think it'll be all we hear.
I'm being slightly facetious
Yeah.
because I
But
broadly agree with
I think
you.
that would have been true 10, 15 years ago, but I think that that conversation has slightly moved on now. So I think if they can make things demonstrably feel and look active and better, and the government's playing a
Modern.
part in that, modern, yeah. So I always thought that New Labour was a bad name because the second you slap new on something, you give it a shelf life. But Labour trying to look and feel modern was a good thing, because it felt active and young. Not that young's a good thing, she says grumbly.
And things can only get better, etc.,
But
etc. So.
exactly that, yeah. So I think if they can just sort of, I come back to those words, active state. That's what we need to see. And it needs to
Is
be,
it?
yeah. If for them to make this a
Ah, okay.
success, they need to show that this an active state is working, that it is putting shovels in the ground, that it is building new things that the country needs.
Look, you and I differentiate on the role of the state, but what you're talking about is frankly what made Boris Johnson so successful for so long. Which was this idea of activity and positivity and doing.
Yeah, Boris Johnson was a mass of contradictions because he was
Sure.
he was a libertarian statist, which just makes no sense.
Sure. And we don't need to, we don't need to particularly
Don't
spend
need to
time.
relitigate that,
No,
but
no.
that.
But I think your summary is fair. But yes, if you want people to buy into what Labour's doing, yes, they do need to see the active state producing stuff. My politics differentiates for that, but that's fine. So I think that's a fair point. But I think she is, Rachel Reeves is going to have a tricky time navigating this economic growth forecast for this year, because every interview she does is going to be that and the benefits cuts, isn't it? Surely.
Every interview, certainly for the next fortnight, is going to be,
Exactly, that's what I was thinking of.
yeah. On the other hand, if by the time we get to the autumn statement, the autumn actual budget thing, and growth is 1.1%, instead of missing her, yeah, the forecast by 9.9%, she's overshot it by 0.1%. So
Sort of,
if
yeah.
she manages to turn things around even a tiny bit from that forecast being lower, right now that's a world of pain for Rachel Reeves, and I'm not making any bones about that. But on the other hand, starting from as low a possible base only gives you one place to go from, we hope.
We do hope. I mean, I think for it to be a win, you'd have to get to 1.5, and even then, you'd have Mel Stride going, yeah, but it was two before.
Yeah, but no one's listening to Mel Stride.
Well, let's get into that a bit, because I think that's an important politics point, actually, because it is basically the worst job in the world, having to respond to a spring statement, autumn statement, or a budget, because you can't do anything. It's particularly bad at this point in the electoral cycle. It's, you know, never mind, you can't do anything, and no one really...
No one cares.
Probably no one cares because of the first point.
Yeah, exactly.
People might care if they know there's going to be a general election in 6 months and you're essentially auditioning your general election campaign and to be the Chancellor.
But you used an interesting phrase earlier, if the Tories get their act together.
Yep.
Now, I am not going to say whether they will or not, but the point of that phrase is they do not currently have their act together.
Oh, no. So
whatever Mel Stride says matters not a jot at the moment while their act is untogether.
No, but I think the thing they need to do is that point about repetition in political comms, isn't it? Rachel Reeves doesn't take responsibility. The growth forecast crashed under her. That's the best they've got, right?
I think that's probably the best they've got. I'm just not sure, again, because of the dangers of that, that it is the best that in the longer term. It's probably the best they've got in the short term.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking earlier, and I think this is probably what I'm going to write because I need to write something.
sound enthusiastic about it for your readers.
I need to write something.
Head over to
something. Woo!
patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast to get sign up to us, and you get both of our newsletters, including the one Emma is so excited to write for you.
But I think that Labour's biggest opposition at the moment is Labour's past statements and Labour's slightly restive backbenchers rather than any other party.
You mean from the left flank of the Labour Party?
I don't just mean from the left flank of the Labour Party. I mean, that's what's interesting. Things that Rachel Reeves said 2 years ago are being held against Rachel Reeves.
Yeah, which does always happen.
And it's not just your usual suspects, you know, your Nadia Whittams, your Clive Lewis. It is much broader than that, the people who are uncomfortable about the welfare reforms.
Well, we did discuss this in quite some depth the other day. I hope people head back and listen to that show. Well, this is fascinating because it's 9 months into the government. It has been a tricky beginning. You know, we discussed the very good week Starmer had. I don't think he's particularly capitalised on that. Like, it's been okay since, but not amazing. And you don't have to have your best week every week. That's not how the world works.
I think where the issue lies, and this comes back to what we were saying about Schrodinger's Chancellor, is that Starmer has really shown himself with purpose on the world stage, but he's the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And if he is outsourcing nearly all of that to Rachel Reeves, I think that's a danger to him as much as to her.
I think that's a great place to leave the conversation. Emma, where can people keep up with you?
So you can find my newsletter, especially recently recommended by Steve Richards on Rock and Roll Politics, at The Political Human, and then I'm on various social medias.
Head over to theedition.net for extra stuff from me on the crossover of culture, media and sport. There's politics, newsletters and blogs there. If you head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, you get... and sign up for just £5 a month. It's nothing. Emma, we're ripping ourselves off, babe. You get both of our newsletters.
I mean, I'm a socialist. I don't know what your excuse is.
Well, quite. You get both of our newsletters and extra podcast episodes. We're recording one that's going out on Friday about that extraordinary development in the US with a senior journalist being added to a highly, highly secretive group chat about bombing Yemen. So come join us for that. House of Comments podcast on Patreon, and we'll see you soon.